KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in False Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
It's a shame because the reason for ANCEP is Alaska Native-based discrimination at every stage from kindergarten through professorship.
The University of Alaska removes the term Alaska Native from a prominent engineering program. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, February 27th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, Juneau companies worry about the tourism season after most Mendenhall Glacier employees were fired.
The Forest Service staff that remain, from what I understand, are kind of in triage mode trying to figure out how to best allocate resources.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. Monies generated through estate and deferred gifts enable public radio to provide our listeners, you, with the level of programming excellence you've come to expect. It may also reduce income and estate taxes. Consult your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Ensure the vitality of public radio by including it in your estate planning. Together, we build a sustainable future for quality media. Thank you.
The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program has removed the phrase Alaska Native from its website. The University of Alaska program is now referred to simply as ANCEP. The change is among several the university system has made to its vast array of programs and services in order to comply with a series of federal directives aimed at getting rid of diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early has more.
Herb Schroeder founded the ANCEP program in 1995, drawing inspiration from his time studying sanitation in the state's rural villages.
In the whole time that I was there, I had never met a Native engineer.
He says the University of Alaska began the program as a way to foster Native engineering talent and also to bridge what he described as a chasm of misunderstanding.
When I went to the village schools, many of the people that were working there told me that Native students were not capable of going and doing engineering and science at the university. And that's a horrible thing for an educator. And it's the problems that we've worked to overcome very successfully in the last 30 years.
Over the years, ANCEP has grown into an award-winning program that hosts camps for primary school students, provides scholarships, and has helped thousands of Alaskans enter the STEM field. Now, the words Alaska Native have been removed from various sections of ANCEP's website. It happened sometime in late January, after President Donald Trump issued an executive order taking aim at what he described as, quote, illegal and immoral discrimination programs going by the name Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, or DEI. Across the country and the state, organizations that receive federal funding, like the University of Alaska, have scrambled to comply with Trump's order. Napoctuck Kat Milligan McClellan is a former ANCEP instructor, and she's disappointed with the language change.
It's a shame because the reason for ANCEP is because Alaska Natives face discrimination at every stage from kindergarten through professorships.
Milligan McClellan is Inupiaq and currently teaches microbiology at the University of Connecticut. She says there are few Alaska Native people in STEM-related fields, and they often face problems ranging from implicit bias or overt racism to a lack of financial resources.
When you take Alaska Native out of ANCEP, what you're really saying to those Alaska Native students is, we don't see the obstacles that you're facing, we're not addressing those obstacles.
However, Schroeder says he's not too worried about the wording change.
That's okay, because what ANCEP does is good for every student.
While ANCEP initially targeted Alaska Native students, Schroeder says more than half of students currently in the program are not Native. He says getting rid of the words Alaska Native on the website doesn't change the mission to align education with Native-based community values.
The principle was to build it so that, based on basic Native principle, a community is more important than the individual. And we went along like that for years, but in a very short amount of time, we discovered that all the students at the university wanted to participate.
ANSEP officials echoed that sentiment in a statement. ANSEP spokespeople wrote that DEI did not impact marketing or selection of students and, quote, no internal policies need to or have been updated. Any changes to language on our website or marketing materials will be in an effort to share the openness of our program to all Alaskans, regardless of background, end quote. The wording change on ANSEP's website occurred before last Friday, when the University of Alaska's Board of Regents voted to no longer use terms like diversity, equity, and inclusion. University officials say they're still working to figure out exactly how to comply with the region's decision, says UA spokesman Jonathan Taylor.
The board's motion passed on Friday, and it's Tuesday afternoon, so we're still determining what that process is going to look like.
He says ahead of the region's decision, the university was already working to update equal opportunity and non-discrimination statements to comply with federal guidance.
Those changes bring our non-discrimination statements in line with the latest federal guidance by essentially clarifying that our hiring, admission, and other practices have always been and remain consistent with federal non-discrimination policies and laws.
He says a specific change was removing language describing affirmative action, language that's been in place since Lyndon Johnson was president in the 1960s. Taylor says the broad language changes the university is working through don't change the institution's commitment to educating a wide range of students. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Most of the staff at one of Juneau's most popular tourism destinations were fired earlier this month. Tourism leaders say they're in the dark about what this means for the summer cruise season. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry reports.
With most of the staff at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center gone, local leaders are worried that the glacier may reduce services or even close for the season, and that would harm Juneau's summer tourism economy. Last week, Juneau's City Visitor Industry Director Alex Pierce said she's been fielding calls from tour operators who want to know what the lack of staff at the visitor center means for their businesses.
Everybody has a lot of questions about, you know, what the next steps are. And I think, you know, the Forest Service staff that remain, from what I understand, are kind of in triage mode trying to figure out how to best allocate resources.
The Visitor Center sees about 1 million visitors per year. It's run by the U.S. Forest Service, which saw about 2,000 job cuts nationwide in the last 2 weeks under a Trump administration plan to reduce the federal workforce. The Tongass National Forest spokesperson is directing all media requests to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which says it doesn't have location-specific information about staffing. As it stands now, Pierce said the city isn't getting information about how the Glacier Recreation Area will operate, and the dramatic staff reductions come after the city and the Visitor Center have spent a decade planning improvements to the Visitor Center. Pierce said there isn't enough information about that either.
We have no idea. We have no idea whether those types of improvements will be funded. We have no idea about anything.
Travel Juneau is the city's destination marketing organization. Liz Perry is the director, and she says these firings come at an especially bad time as visitors are finalizing their plans for the summer. City leaders expect more than 1.6 million people will come to Juneau on cruise ships this summer.
Knowing whether or not the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Area Visitor Center is going to be able to operate or how it's going to operate is going to be a key piece to a lot of those plans because it's one of the number one things for people to do when they get in town.
Perry works with 260 businesses, many of which operate at the glacier. She's heard from tourism operators who say they're worried about their business investments if the glacier is off limits for the season. Other small business owners are worried as well. Sean Isley is the executive director of Discovery Southeast, a nonprofit that offers natural education programs for kids in Juneau and operates the bookstore in the visitor center. It stocks items from local artists and authors and funds half of Discovery Southeast's budget.
It is in my mind, one of the best success stories of local tourism in Southeast and in Juneau.
Isley says the partnership between his organization and the Forest Service allows for locals to have a hand in educating tourists and benefit from the high numbers of visitors who come to see the glacier. Now, he's not sure what the firings mean for the bookstore this summer, and he's worried about the implications.
It's a scary and dire situation that that's true for the individuals who are fired. It's true for the individuals who remain. It's true for Discovery Southeast. And I think it's probably true for our community, too.
But some businesses aren't as worried. Juneau Tours buses run to the Mendenhall Glacier 5 to 10 times each day during cruise season. Serene Hutchinson says her company has the second largest tourism operations permit for the glacier.
It is a foundation of our business.
But Hutchinson says she's seen government shutdowns and other obstacles to the glacier's operations before, and she's optimistic the Forest Service will have a plan for the season.
This is not completely unfamiliar territory for us as an operator, and every other time it's been figured out.
She says that if the visitor center shuts down, she at least wants her customers to see the glacier from the viewpoints near the parking lot.
Obviously, we want full service, but if they have to, I hope that at the very least we can keep the views open and the bathrooms, because they're just as important as the views.
Juneau's first cruise ship of the season is scheduled to arrive April 14th. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration staff at the Kodiak office confirmed some of their piers were abruptly fired today. Staff could not confirm how many people were affected or what positions were cut in this wave of firings from the Trump administration. NOAA plays a critical role in Alaska's coastal economy, especially by managing many of the state's commercial fisheries and helping enforce laws at sea. It also researches the effects of climate change, an issue that Republican President Donald Trump has long criticized. Some officials braced for cuts earlier this month amid executive orders targeting climate change programs. The White House's Department of Government Efficiency, run by Elon Musk, is taking credit for dismissing thousands of federal employees as part of an attempt to cut trillions of dollars in federal spending. While some firings have been ruled as illegal in courts and led to rehiring some civil servants, many are still in limbo. Senators Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan, as well as Representative Nick Begich, were unavailable for comment on the NOAA firings. Murkowski has previously criticized Trump for firing federal employees, saying it violates laws set by Congress. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Fairbanks prepares to host the Iditarod restart for just the fourth time in race history.
That means a lot here to host the biggest sled dog race left in Alaska, and we're a big, strong supporter of our state sport.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Did you know 100 years ago, the chances of a baby dying in Alaska before their first birthday was almost 10%? Because of advances in public health like sanitation, access to clean water, vaccines for children, and access to health care in rural communities, the chances of dying are now less than 1%. To learn more about what the Alaska Department of Health is doing to improve Alaskans' health for the next 100 years, visit health.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
The Alaska Bureau of Investigation is looking into a fatal shooting by a North Slope Borough Police Department officer earlier this week in Utqiagvik. Alaska State Troopers say the shooting occurred after Borough Police responded to a report of a domestic violence assault at a residence in the North Slope community. A trooper report says officers found 41-year-old Akugak Levitt outside the home. He didn't comply with officers' orders and tried to run back into the residence, but one of the officers shot him and he was declared dead at the scene. The Alaska Department of Public Safety identified Donovan Chappell as the officer who discharged his weapon. Officers then found an injured person inside the home who was transported to a local hospital for treatment of injuries believed to have been sustained in a domestic violence assault. The report says Levitt had an outstanding warrant for his arrest related to a previous domestic violence incident. According to an online court database, Levitt had numerous convictions for domestic violence, assaults, and other offenses, including failure to register as a sex offender. The database also shows several civil protective orders had been filed against him. The trooper report says Alaska Bureau of Investigation officers from the MATSU and Fairbanks traveled to Utqiagvik on Monday and began investigating the case. The report says once their investigation is complete, the shooting will be independently reviewed by the Alaska Office of Special Prosecutions. And Anchorage police say a man forcibly held a woman on top of him while lying on the ground and threatening her with a gun before he was fatally shot by officers last Friday morning. Officers shot the man after a roughly five-hour standoff at the Hampton Inn in Midtown. At a press conference today, Police Chief Sean Case provided additional details on the shooting, describing it as a hostage situation. He says officers were called to the hotel at around 3:45 in the morning after being told there was a suspicious vehicle in the parking lot.
The vehicle was involved in a looting earlier in the night from the Anchorage Police Department.
Case said a man in the vehicle went to a hotel room where he met another man, a woman, and several children. He said officers communicated with the man and woman through a partially open door and determined the suspect was holding the others hostage. Case said the suspect then pointed a handgun at officers and slammed the door closed. The man in the room with the suspect eventually was released as officers kept in contact with the woman, Case said.
While they are standing outside of the room, they hear a shot being fired from inside the room. Those officers then attempt to make entry inside of the room. While they're trying to make entry into the room, two shots are fired through the door at the same time. At that point in time, they back away from the door since they weren't able to gain entry.
Case said a SWAT team arrived and crisis negotiators tried to get the suspect to cooperate for about 5 hours until, he said, officers were alerted to the suspect assaulting the woman. With the use of an explosive, Case said, they breached the door and saw the suspect lying on the ground between two beds with the woman on top of him. He was aiming his gun at her, Case said.
So when the officers see the gun and they yell to drop the gun twice and don't do it, one officer steps up on that first bed and fires one round. He fired one round with a handgun. The second officer fires one round from a rifle.
The man was pronounced dead at the scene at around 9 a.m. in the morning. Police have not yet released his name. Case declined to elaborate on the relationship between the man and the people in the hotel room with him. He said no one else in the room was seriously injured. This is the fourth police shooting in Anchorage this year and one of a dozen in the past 12 months. Seven of the people have died. A state-run trust that owns much of the land surrounding a controversial mining project outside Haines has formally decided against purchasing federal mining claims in the area. The decision comes after the exploration project's biggest backer also cut ties in November. As Avery Elfelt reports for the Alaska Desk, what it all means for the project remains unclear.
The Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority decided earlier this month that it will not purchase federal mining claims from a prospector who discovered copper and zinc outside of Haines more than 5 decades ago. The trust declined an interview request, but a spokesperson emphasized via email that the organization's resources must be used in the best interest of the trust, which funds mental health-related programs and services. She said the trust considered the cost of the claims and potential returns when making the decision. The trust board notified the prospector and former Haines resident, Merrill Palmer, of the decision after a closed-door board session in early February. American Pacific Mining Corp., which owns the nearby exploration project, was also notified. The specifics of why Palmer wants to sell his claims and what the trust decision might mean for the project remain unclear. But Jessica Plakta, the executive director of Lynn Canal Conservation, a Haines-based environmental nonprofit that opposes the potential mine, says there are a slew of factors that make the project risky.
The Palmer Project is located in a remote and hazardous location. It's inaccessible under deep snow for half a year, not to mention that it's dubious whether the deposit itself is worth mining, which is, of course, the bottom line for mining companies.
Palmer and the companies involved in the project either declined or could not be reached for comment. Palmer staked the claims in the 1960s. The claims went on to become the heart of the exploration project, known as the Palmer Project, that has long fueled intense political debate in the surrounding area. Developing a mine could inject a lot of investor dollars into the local economy and create high-paying jobs. But mines come with environmental risk. Critics worry the local environment, including the world's only bald eagle preserve, could be impacted. The claims mean Palmer could potentially earn royalties on minerals if a mine ever opens. More than 5 years ago, Palmer offered to relinquish those claims to the trust, which owns much of the surrounding land and leases it for exploration. The trust has been mulling the offer ever since. The trust's latest decision follows the news in November that Doa Metals and Mining, the multinational metals company that had backed the project for years, was giving up its roughly 70% stake. American Pacific Mining became the sole owner. American Pacific executives said differing visions for the project prompted the deal. In a video announcing the news, CEO Warwick Smith billed it as a fantastic move for American Pacific shareholders that puts the company on, quote, very solid footing.
If you were an American Pacific shareholder yesterday, you went to bed and the company had about $2.5 million in cash and owned 29% of the Palmer Project. When you wake up this morning, we have $16 million in cash. and we own 100% of the 14 million ton VMS Palmer project.
Smith added that newfound Republican control of the U.S. Senate, House, and White House will also contribute to what he says are bright days ahead for American Pacific. President Donald Trump signed an executive order in January that promised to unleash what he called Alaska's extraordinary resource potential, including as it relates to minerals.
The feeling in particular for Alaska, and I'll give an example of this, is things like permitting and these projects are going to move ahead quite rapidly.
Palmer Project critics, for their part, say DOA's exit and the trust decision raise questions about the project's value and what comes next. In Haines, I'm Avery Elfelt.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, maintaining and operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com.
Local sponsors do right by their business and for the community by supporting public media stations. Thank you for considering adding your corporate support. You'll be in good company. One of the greatest honors for a public media station is delivering on its promise to provide quality programming and news you can trust to the communities it serves. What you hear on air is the result of a dedicated team working together to bring you the best. It's a privilege to be a part of your day. Thank you for listening, for your feedback, and for your support.
Yeah, we have a game coming up here at 6:30, so stay tuned.
Kids in Nairobi, Kenya. The students hope to experience the race in person, but as KNOM's Ben Townsend reports, they've sent keepsakes for this year's participants instead.
Anchorage's Brad Schmitz coordinates tours for English language learners. His travels have taken him to classrooms around the world, including in Kenya, where he recently returned with 200 handmade bead bracelets.
We could give one of these bracelets to all the mushers, so maybe perhaps they could take it with them on the race.
The bracelets were made by a class at Sheba Education Center, a K-8 school in the African nation's capital of Nairobi. Schmidt says the students have been interested in the Iditarod since starting a pen pal program with a class in Homer in 2021. Schmidt's helped connect the two classes.
And kind of through the whole process, it exploded in Kenya, and they were so excited learning about Alaska.
On a whim, Schmidt sent a photo of an old Iditarod dog sled to the student's teacher.
Randomly, I'm like, hey, could you guys build a dog sled at your school? Just not having any clue of what was going to happen.
To his surprise, they sent back a photo of a polka-dotted sheet of plywood with a rudimentary wood frame. A handwritten sign reading Kenya's dog sled adorned the top. Schmidt says the photo gave him a tidal wave of inspiration to bring the students to see the Iditarod firsthand. A number of Alaskan businesses like Snow City Cafe and Beartooth in Anchorage have already offered to help make the dream a reality by donating gift cards and promising meals when the kids get here. But Schmidt says what's lacking is cash for plane tickets, which he expects will cost $25,000. He also says visas for the students will also take a while, so in the meantime, they hope the bracelets will bring a piece of Kenya to the course.
Well, we're hoping, right, with bracelets and all these amazing things, you know, we'll have that kind of energy leading up to next year.
Schmidt plans to personally distribute the bracelets at the Musher meet and greet event in Anchorage Thursday night. He's also traveling to Nome for the finish, where he hopes he'll be able to meet mushers that brought the bracelets along on trail. Reporting just blocks from the finish of the Iditarod, I'm Ben Townsend.
Interior Alaska residents are hustling to get ready for the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race next week now that the competition is starting in Fairbanks due to low snow on part of the normal route. Many business owners and checkpoint staff along the new trail say they saw this coming, but they say it's still a Herculean task to get ready to welcome floods of Iditarod staff, mushers, spectators, and of course the sled dogs. Shelby Herbert reports for the Alaska Desk.
When Pike's Waterfront Lodge staff got the news that they'd host the Fairbanks Iditarod for the first time in almost a decade, they comped about 40 rooms for the race's mushers and organizers, even though they're in the thick of tourist season for aurora viewing and are almost completely booked out.
We're already busy, but we love hosting the Iditarod. We're so happy it's here. You know?
Michelle Davis is the lodge's chief operating officer. She walks through one of Pike's few remaining vacant rooms which could very soon be occupied by members of the Iditarod crowd. This one has a full view of the lodge's live reindeer pen.
We kind of wanted to feel like a cabin, but not a cabin, like more luxury, you know? So, and you open and you see reindeer. That's the best part. They're right there. And then you can walk out your room and you can be right outside with the reindeer.
Pike's Lodge is a pet-friendly resort, but the reindeer room invite doesn't extend to the dog teams. They scare the deer, so many of them will be kept at a nearby church. Davis is among many Alaskans in Fairbanks and in smaller interior communities, sprinting to ready enough beds, food, and warm drinks for Iditarod teams. It's an exciting time, Davis says, especially for her international employees.
I always let all our staff come out and watch a couple of the races when they're working, so it's going to be great for them to experience something they wouldn't have been able to.
And she says getting in the global spotlight at the starting line will be great for business. That sentiment was echoed in the public sector by Fairbanks Mayor Grier Hopkins.
It means a lot here to host the biggest sled dog race left in Alaska, and we're a big, strong supporter of our state sport, and I think our economy is ready and excited to have the influx in winter and build on our strong winter tourism as we've seen them in recent years.
Scott McCrae is the president of a local tourism marketing nonprofit called Explore Fairbanks. He says his organization is already reflecting on the possibility that the city will host the Iditarod with greater frequency as the climate demands.
You know, we're seeing here how the winters in Alaska are changing, so this probably won't be the last time that we'll have it here. And if that's the case, you know, we will proudly embrace it being here and just kind of do what we do as Fairbanksans and, you know, try to make it the best possible.
Further out on the trail, Galena is scrambling to get its race checkpoint ready. The town of just under 500 wasn't supposed to be on the trail either this year. It usually only hosts the race every other year. Tim Bedoni, Galena's checkpoint manager, is getting lodging squared away at the community center, where mushers will sleep on cots gifted by the Red Cross to shelter people displaced by Yukon River floods in 2013. The dogs will bed down in the snow that covers a frozen lake nearby. There's also the food. Bedoni says he expects residents to rally to cook for the mushers like they've done in the past.
We have to practice hospitality out here. That's the way of the trail. You got people coming in with no ability to just simply go out to a restaurant, and they're reliant on us for that. And it's just, it gives Galena a good name. People know that.
And Bedoni has a very specific set of instructions. Keep it hearty. Keep it simple.
Keep it comfort food style. Don't get too spicy. That's not going to go well. Mushers tend to want something that sticks to the ribs and is warm. Volunteers, too, once you've been outside all day, you just want something comforting to heat you up, and then you want to go to bed.
The 2025 Iditarod will officially start at Pike's Waterfront Lodge in Fairbanks on Monday, March 3rd at 11 a.m. Lodge staff encourage spectators to arrive early to find parking and good spots to view the starting line. Reporting in Fairbanks, I'm Shelby Herbert.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Wesley Early in Anchorage, Yvonne Crumrie in Juneau, Brian Venwa in Kodiak, Tim Ellis in Delta Junction, Avery Elfelt in Haines, Ben Townsend in Nome, and Shelby Herbert in Fairbanks. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky's our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Public media loves being part of your day. Thank you for listening and for your support.
Start your day with a quick look at the most important stories from around the state with Alaska Morning News, your dose of headlines each weekday morning. With reporters covering every corner of Alaska, you can be sure you're up to date on the stories that matter to Alaskans. Join me, Ava White, for Alaska Morning News, weekdays on your local public radio station.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media. Thank you.
think the main player from King Cove that we want to be talking about is number four, Michael Gould. He had an impressive 31 points yesterday. On the Sam Point side, though, number 23, Rowdy Tripp, also had a 31-point game. So this is going to be a pretty awesome matchup we have here tonight. Sam Point taking the court, getting ready for this game. Players exchanging some high fives. Our official with the ball, ready to tip off here. The winner of this game will advance to play winner of Manicotic versus Tenalium, which is taking place at 8 o'clock tonight. So a very big game for both of these teams to hopefully advance to the championship game of the regionals tournament. Number four and number 23 from Sandpoint tipping off. Sandpoint is going to win the tip. Sandpoint with the ball, passing it around the perimeter, looking to get a shot here. Going to the right side, going to the left. Drive inside. Sandpoint looking, passing it around inside. It's back on the perimeter. Trip with it outside, passing it to the corner. Drive inside by Sandpoint. And that's going to be a short corner jump shot for number 42, Kalugin. No good. Rebounded by Sandpoint. Back to Kalugin. He's got it inside. And one bucket for number 42, Peter Kalugin. He's going to go to the line. So Sandpoint getting the first points of the night. 2-0. Sandpoint up, Lugan at the line. Lugan had a great night yesterday with 8 points, getting a bunch of rebounds, being a good big man for Sandpoint. Free throw is no good by Lugan. King Cove's going to get that rebound and bring it the other way. Michael Gould with the first shot for King Cove, a three-pointer from Michael Gould to give them a one-point lead. Score is 3-2. King Cove is up. Standpoint with the ball, swinging it around. Ball goes to the corner, inside, going back out. Ball going back around the perimeter, knocked out of bounds by Michael Gould. It's going to stay here. Standpoint ball. So number four, Miskocho for Standpoint, inbounds the ball. Goes to the short corner. Shot by number one, McLaughlin, is no good. Rebounded by King Cove. King Cove has the ball. They're taking it the other way. Michael Gould bringing it up the court. Gould looking for a pass, passing to the left side. Gould with the ball back on top. Looking around the perimeter. King Cove passing the ball. Michael Gould passes to the top of the key. Turnover there by number 15, Brennan Larson. So Sandpoint with the ball. Gould dives, deflects the ball out of bounds. A nice defensive effort there by Gould, but it's going to stay Sandpoint ball. Tyler Gunderson inbounding for the Eagles here. Ball is being passed around the perimeter. Gunderson with the ball back. Over to Rowdy Tripp. Tripp is looking. Passing it around. Ball's in the short corner now. Drive inside by Jeremy McLaughlin. Going back outside. Gunderson driving in. Gunderson looking. Passing the ball. Rowdy Tripp with the ball on the perimeter. Three-point shot, no good, but rebounded by Kalugin. Sandpoint with the ball, passing it around the perimeter. Tripp inside. He's going to go up and draw the foul. So Rowdy Tripp headed to the line for a pair of free throws. Score is 3-2. King Cove is up by 1 point. Rowdy Tripp looking to take the lead here. Tripp, Sandpoint's high scorer last night with 31 points. Let's see if he can have that sort of impact again. Trip with a free throw there, going for the second attempt. So score is now 3-3, tie ball game. Trip hoping to take the lead here. And second free throw is good by Trip. So score is now 3-4. King Cove with a ball shot from the corner, and it is good. That was number three, Riley Wilson, who just sunk that three-point for King Cove. Wilson had quite the night last night with 7 three-pointers and 23 points. Was balling out yesterday. So Sandpoint with the ball, kick ball there by number 15 of King Cove, Brennan Larson. So it's going to be a Sandpoint ball out of bounds here.
officials doing a check on the scoreboard here, it looks like. And it looks like there's some confusion with the scorekeeper, so they're going to try and reset the scoreboard here. So the scoreboard was showing 6-3, but the actual score is 6-4, which they just updated here. The Sandpoint ball out of bounds. Jeremy McGlashan passing it in. Ball goes outside. Three-pointer from number 4, Viscocho. It gives Sandpoint a lead, 6-7. Sandpoint with the 1-point lead. King Cove with the ball. Big man Robert Thompson turns the ball over, passing it out of bounds. He's trying to pass it to number 1, Iapana. It's going to be a Sandpoint ball coming the other way. So 6-7, Sandpoint with the 1-point lead. Ball is being passed around the perimeter, drive inside. Ball in the short corner, ball back outside. Rowdy Tripp, 3-point attempt, and it is good. Rowdy Tripp with another 3-pointer tonight. So it looks like there's going to be a little bit of an equipment timeout here. A King Cove player tying his shoe, so we're just waiting for him. 5 minutes left here in the first quarter. Score is 6-10. Sandpoint with a 4-point lead here in Port Allsworth. Winner will move on to the semifinals. King Cove with the ball, passing it around the perimeter. Gould with the ball. He's looking for his man down low, but couldn't get it. Turned over, but King Cove's going to get the ball back on another turnover. That is, ball is up, shot, no good. That was Riley Wilson driving the ball in, and then a shot attempt there in the middle of the key, no good. It's going to be deflected out of bounds. Sandpoint ball. Sandpoint with the ball, passing around the perimeter. Viscocho with the ball up top. Gunderson passes to the corner. Gunderson back with the ball, dribbling around the top of the perimeter. Rowdy Tripp, 3-point attempt, no good. Ball is recovered by Sandpoint. Tripp gets the ball, drives inside. No good. And ball is tipped out of bounds there on the rebound attempt by the big man, Robert Thompson. So it's going to be a Sandpoint ball. 4 minutes left in the first quarter. Sandpoint passing the ball around the perimeter. And that's stolen. Number 15 for King Cove. Got the ball there. King Cove going the other way. Cross court pass from King Cove. Number 3, Wilson, has the ball at the top. Passing it around. Gould with the ball, driving inside. Cross court pass to Wilson, who's wide open. 3-point attempt is no good. Rebounded by Larson, though. And he's going to get an easy layup there. 8-10. 2-point game. Sandpoint is leading. Sandpoint now with the ball, bringing it up the court. Rowdy Tripp with the ball on the right side of the court. He's going to pass to Gunderson. Gunderson passing the ball around. Top of the key. Rowdy Tripp, pump fake, drives inside. Little jump shot from Tripp there, no good. Rebounded by number 15, Brennan Larson for King Cove. It's going to go the other way. Michael Gould bringing the ball off the court. Deflected by number 4 of his Cocho for Sandpoint. It's going out of bounds. King Cove ball, though. So score is 8-10. Then King Cove with the ball. About 3 minutes left here in the first quarter. Gould looking for a pass at the top of the perimeter. Going to pass to the big man Thompson. That's going to swing around to the left side. Back right. Ball coming right. Ball just swinging around the perimeter right now. King Cove trying to get something. Shot attempt by Wilson. No good. Rebounded by Sandpoint. Going to go the other way. Rowdy Tripp driving the ball inside. Tipped out of bounds by number 15, Brennan Larson. So Sandpoint ball staying here. Scores 8-10, Sandpoint with a 2-point lead. Sandpoint inbounding, and that is stolen. Michael Gould has got a steal going the other way. Fast break layup there by Michael Gould to tie the game up 10-10. High game here in Port Allsworth, 10-10. King Cove versus Sandpoint. Rowdy Tripp bringing the ball up the court for Sandpoint. Tripp looking for a pass to a teammate. He's going to pass to the left side, back to Tripp. Tripp jump shot from the top of the key, and he has got it. Rowdy Tripp with another 2 points. Scores 10-12. 2 minutes left in the first quarter. Sandpoint with the lead. Number 15, Brennan Larson, has the ball, passing it to Gould for King Cove, going down low to the big man Thompson, passing it around the perimeter. Larson driving inside, dump to the big man Thompson. He's going to miss. Rebounded by King Cove, though. Logan Iapana going for the putback shot, but he is fouled, and he's going to go to the line. So two shots here for Iapana. Score is 10-12. Sandpoint with a two-point lead. So far, been an awesome game. Iapana, this is going to be his first bucket of the night with that free throw. So Iapana good on the first one. Scores 11-12 now. Sandpoint, high scorer of the night. Rowdy Tripp with 7 points. So number one, Iapana. Second free throw attempt is no good. Rebounded by Sandpoint coming the other way. Scores 11-12. Sandpoint with a one-point lead. Sandpoint looking for a shot, passing around the perimeter. Bad pass there, is going to go off of Logan Iapana's leg and out of bounds. So Sandpoint ball under the basket. Sandpoint inbounds the ball. It's stolen by Michael Gould, who's taking it the other way, looking for a fast break layup. Can't get it. Rebounded by King Cove. It's going to go outside. Riley Wilson with a three-pointer. It's good. Riley Wilson of King Cove with a nice three-pointer there to take the lead. Score is 14-12. King Cove now with the two-point lead. Sandpoint with the ball. Rowdy Tripp driving inside, looking for a pass. Going to pass it out, swinging around the perimeter, and deflected out of bounds by number 15, Brennan Larson. It's going to be a Sandpoint ball under the hoop again. About 1 minute and 7 seconds left in the first quarter. Sam Pinko with a two-point lead, 14-12. Sandpoint inbounding the ball. Passing around, going to the short corner, back out. Rowdy Tripp trying to get a three-pointer off, but good King Cove defense there. And there's a three-point attempt. Three-point made by number four, Vizcocho, to give Sandpoint the lead, 14-15. One-point lead by Sandpoint. We've got 40 seconds left. King Cove trying to get these final points. Three-point attempt, fadeaway three-pointer from Michael Gould. No good. Deflected out of bounds, and it's going to be a King Cove ball. So 14-15, one-point game. Sandpoint with the lead. 34 seconds remain in the first quarter. So King Cove looking for the inbound. King Cove inbound shot attempt there by Wilson. No good. He gets his own rebound. Passing it around the perimeter. Grabbed by Larson. Larson looking for a pass out of the perimeter. Deflected. Riley Wilson's going to grab it. Michael Gould, deep three-pointer. No good. Rebounded by Sandpoint. Sandpoint bringing the ball back to their side. 15 seconds left in the first quarter, trying to get this last shot. Stolen by Gould. Gould's taking it the other way. 8 seconds left. Gould looking for the fast break layup. He got it. 2 points for Michael Gould to give King Cove the lead here at the end of the first quarter. Number zero, Gunnison, looking for the buzzer beater. Three for Sandpoint, but no good. Score is 16-15. King Cove with the lead so far. A very close game here in Port Allsworth. Sandpoint, so far top scorers, number four, Vizcocho, with a pair of threes for 6 points. Number 23 for Sandpoint, Rowdy Tripp, with 7 points, Sandpoint's high scorer. On the King Cove side, our high scorer so far, Riley Wilson with 6 points, and then at a close second of 5 points, we have Michael Gould. So far a pretty even game between both teams. Very low fouling game. Riley Wilson with one personal foul, as well as Robert Thompson, number 34, with a personal foul. On the Sandpoint side, number four, Vizcocho, has one foul, but that's about it. So both teams coming out of the huddle, taking the court again, and looking to get some momentum here in this second quarter. So King Cove will be taking the ball out of bounds at half court. Referee has passed the ball in. Michael Gould with the ball, dribbling it up the court for King Cove. Score is 16-15.
King Cove with a 1-point lead right here at the beginning of the second quarter. Passing the ball around the perimeter. King Cove looking for a nice shot here. Gould dribbling to the right. Gould with a deep 3-pointer. No good. Bounces off the top of the rim. Rebounded by Larson, though. He's going to take it inside and draw a shooting. Sorry. Looks like that foul is going to be on the ground. So Larson draws a foul on the ground. It's going to stay on King Cove's side. So Larson inbounding the ball here. And looking for number 3, Wilson. Wilson pulls up for the mid-range jumper. No good. Rebounded by Kalugin of Sandpoint, and it's going to go the other way. So Biscocho for Sandpoint, taking it up the court, passing to the left. And the ball is going around the perimeter now on the right side of the court. Gunderson driving in, looking outside for Rowdy Tripp. 3-point attempt, no good. Rebounded by the big man Thompson of King Cove. So Robert Gould bringing the ball off the court for King Cove. And number 3, Wilson with another 3-point attempt, no good. Rebounded by the big man, Robert Thompson, number 34, and he has got 2 points. So score is 18-15, King Cove with a 3-point lead here. Sandpoint with the ball, passing it to the right. Rowdy Tripp trying to get something going. He's going to pass across the court to Biscocho. Ooh, we got Kalugin in the middle of the key with a nice, easy bucket there. Mid-range shot from the middle of the key by Kalugin. Score is 18-17, King Cove. Looking to get a bucket here. Big man Thompson backing his man down. He's going to pass it to the short corner. 15, Larson. Mid-range attempts, no good. So Sandpoint's got that rebound, and they're going to take it the other way. Score is 18-17. King Cove with a 1-point lead here. Rowdy Tripp with the ball. Passing it around. Going to the short corner. Back outside. Sandpoint. Mid-range shot there from Kalugin. No good. It's rebounded by King Cove. So King Cove's Michael Gould bringing it the other way. Back down low to the big man. Riley Wilson with it at the top of the key. Wilson to Larson. Wilson with the ball again. Passing it to Gould. Gould has got the ball. And he is going to try for the layup, but no good. He draws the foul. And looks like that one was on the ground. So, number 4, Michael Gould drawing that foul on the ground. It's going to be a King Cove ball out of bounds. They're looking to inbound here. Goes to the big man Thompson. Fadeaway jumper from Thompson. Put a little Dirk Nowitzki there to get 2 points for King Cove. So, 20-17. King Cove leading this game. Sandpoint with the ball. No-look pass from Rowdy Tripp to a wide-open man under the basket. 2 points for Sandpoint. And there's a timeout from King Cove coach Ricky De La Cruz. So King Cove calling the timeout. Close game here in Port Allsworth. 20-19. King Cove winning this game by 1 point and about 5.5 minutes left in the second quarter. So pretty even game from both sides of the ball. Some definite stars in this game. Riley Wilson still at 6 points. Michael Gould also 1 point below him with 5. And for Sandpoint, Rowdy Tripp with 7 points. Biscocho with 6. So very even game. Both teams talking it over. Coach Brandon Smith for Sandpoint talking it over with his boys, going over some strategy. Sandpoint hoping to take the lead here. It's a very close game. Both teams coming back onto the court. It's going to be a King Cove ball heading down the court. So number 15, Larson, inbounding to number 4, Michael Gould. Gould is going to dribble the ball slowly up the court, looking for an open man here. Sandpoint sticking with the man defense here. Number 3, Wilson. Ooh, ankle breaker by Wilson. He's going to go for the 3, but no good. Rebounded by Sandpoint. King Cove applying the pressure. Rowdy Tripp driving down the court, looking for a pass. Passing to the right side. Tripp, back of the ball, stolen by Larson. Larson on the fast break, and he's got it. 2 points by number 15, Brennan Larson. So King Cove 22-19, leading this game by 3. Rowdy Tripp with the ball for Sandpoint. He's going to pass outside to Kalugin. Kalugin picks up his dribble, passing back out to number 4, Viscocho. He's going to go for a deep 3. No good. King Cove with the rebound. So scores 22-19. King Cove leading this game by 3 points. Michael Gould taking the ball into the key. Little jump shot there. No good. Rebounded by Rowdy Tripp for Sandpoint, and he's going to bring it the other way. Sandpoint's got a man open down low, but nope, they're going to pass it back out. Rowdy Tripp's got the ball. He's looking inside, passing it out to Tyler Gunderson. 3-pointer, good. Tyler Gunderson of Sandpoint tying this game up 22-22. 3 minutes and 50 seconds left in the second quarter. Tie ball game here. Number 15, Brennan Larson, bringing the ball up the court. He's going to pass it to Gould, who's going to go for a little mid-range jumper there. No good. Rebounded by Sandpoint. Sandpoint's Peter Kalugin with that rebound, passing it to Viscocho, number 4. Got the ball, bringing it up the court. Pass to Rowdy Tripp. Tripp looking to the corner to Kalugin. Back to Tripp. Tripp with a 3-point attempt. No good. Rebounded by Sandpoint, though. That was number 1, McGlashan, who was looking for that putback layup there, but no good. He's going to be fouled on that shot attempt and going to the line for 2 here. So number 1, Jeremy McGlashan, on the line for Sandpoint, looking to get a 2-point lead here for the Eagles. McGlashan, first free throw is good. So the score is 22-23. Sandpoint with a 1-point lead here. Substitution here for King Cove, big man Robert Thompson is going to come in. And free throw is no good, but rebound by Rowdy Tripp. He's going to go for the putback. No good. Rebounded by the big man Thompson. Michael Gould with a deep 3-point attempt and air ball there going out of bounds. So it's going to be a Sandpoint ball coming the other way. Viscocho for Sandpoint bringing the ball off the court. He's going to pass to Rowdy Tripp. Tripp passing to Gunderson. Some movement here around the top of the key. Sandpoint moving around quickly, looking for an open man. Drive to the short corner, pass to Kalugin inside. And he got the bucket there, Kalugin, but it looks like there's going to be a foul called before that. So foul on the ground, Sandpoint ball under the hoop. Tripp with the inbound, passing it out to Viscocho. Viscocho to the corner. And that's number 2, Peter, number 42, Peter Kalugin with a 3-pointer there. So score is 22-26, Sandpoint with the lead. King Cove looking inside, deflected out of bounds by Rowdy Tripp of Sandpoint there. So King Cove ball under the basket, number 15, Brennan Larson coming in to inbound. King Cove inbounding the ball here, Larson looking for a man. And that's going to be a 5-second violation on Larson, not able to get it in quite fast enough. Sandpoint locking it down on the defense there. So Sandpoint ball after the turnover coming the other way. Score is 22-26. Sandpoint leading this game by 4. Rowdy Tripp on the right side of the court, dribbling, looking for something. He's going to pass it out. Back to Rowdy Tripp. Tripp driving inside, went for the shot attempt. No good. So King Cove gets the rebound, bringing it the other way. King Cove passing the ball around. Number 15, Larson with a 3-point attempt. No good. Rebounded by number 42 of Sandpoint, Kalugin. The Sandpoint coming the other way. 2 minutes left in the second quarter. Tripp driving inside. He's going to kick it out to Gunderson. Gunderson driving inside, looking for a pass. Going to pass it out to Viscocho. Viscocho to Tripp in the corner. Tripp from the short corner. Shot attempt. He's going to get his own rebound there and put it back up. Looks like they're going to call an offensive foul there on number 23 for Sandpoint, Rowdy Tripp. He's not super happy with that call. I didn't really see what happened there, but it's going to be a King Cove ball. So King Cove ball on their side of the court. Number 3, Wilson dribbling around. He's going to put up the 3. No good. Sandpoint with the rebound. Viscocho on that one. Number 4 bringing it up the court. Viscocho turns the ball over, passing it to number 1, Logan Iapana of King Cove. So Iapana with the steal there. It's going to go the other way. 15, Larson has the ball at the top of the perimeter. Passes it to Michael Gould. Gould
dribbling to the right side, passes it inside to the big man Thompson. He's going to pass it back outside to Larson. Larson driving inside, tries to dump it to Wilson, but it's stolen by Gunderson of Sandpoint. Gunderson on the fast break, not able to get the fast break layup. Bispocho with the rebound. Gunderson gets the ball back down low, misses another shot. Kinkobe with the rebound. They're going the other way. Score is 22-26. We have under a minute in the second quarter remaining. Kinkobe trying to bring it the other way, but it's going to go off the hands of number one, Logan Iafana. So Sandpoint ball bringing it the other way. So Sandpoint passing the ball around the perimeter. 40 seconds remain in the second quarter. Rowdy trip. A little short corner jump shot there for two more points for the Eagles. So score is 22-28. 30 seconds remain. Sandpoint leading this game. Kinkobe with the ball. Turned over by Michael Gould. Looks like there's going to be a foul call there. Oh, a travel call on Sandpoint. So travel call on Sandpoint. It's going to stay Kinkobe ball here. Kinkobe inbounding the ball under the hoop. 15, Larson inbounding the ball. He's got Wilson. Wilson dribbling around the perimeter. 20 seconds left. Back to Larson. Larson dribbling to the top of the key there. 13 seconds remain. Kinkobe going to try and get this last shot before the end of the quarter. And that's going to be a charge called on number four, Michael Gould. So it's going to head the other way. 8 seconds left. Sandpoint ball. Oh, excuse me. I think that was an illegal screen, actually. So ball is in. 6 seconds left. Sandpoint with the ball, looking to get that last shot. Bispocho with the last second three. No good. Rebounded by Larson. He's going to try a full court shot with 1 second left, but it is no good. So that's it. That is the end of the first half here. Score is 22-28. Sandpoint leading this game. Some pretty close game so far. So 6-point lead by Sandpoint. We'll see what happens here in the second half. Both teams been going back and forth this whole game. Sandpoint able to pull it out a little bit there at the end. So let's go into our halftime stats here. Scoring leader for Kinkobe right now, Riley Wilson, number three, with 6 points. He had a pair of threes there in the first quarter. Our first high score here, Riley Wilson. Coming up in second, Michael Gould with only 5 points there. A three-pointer and a two-pointer there in the first quarter. Our next highest scorer is number 34, big man Robert Thompson, who had 4 points in the second quarter. Brennan Larson, number 15, with 2 points. And then Logan Iafana, number one, with a free throw in the first quarter for him. As far as fouls, Riley Wilson, number three, has one foul. Michael Gould, number four, has one foul. Taylor Gould, number 13, has a foul. Number 15, Brennan Larson, has a foul. And Robert Thompson, the big man, number 34, has a foul as well. Scoring here from Kinkobe, we've seen some, you know, good moments from all of these players. They're playing pretty well as a team, but I think really what's giving Sandpoint the edge here is just some turnovers, some bad shot selection, and but overall, a pretty evenly matched game, I would say.